The third set of curves, in red at the bottom, is from random samples of rocks I personally picked up from the surface of Mercury. They are very different in mineral content and in isotope ratios from the acknowledged Martian rocks and from Dr. Molina's samples. Molina sagged back in his chair, speechless. Relentlessly, Kaprowitz went on. I then used the tunneling microscope to search for inclusions in the samples. Another graph appeared on the wall screen. I found several, which held gases trapped within the rocks. The ratio of noble gases in the inclusions matched the composition of the Martian atmosphere, down to the limits of the measurement capabilities. If these samples had been on the surface of Mercury for any reasonable length of time, the gases would have been baked out of the rock by the planet's high daytime temperatures. Are you saying, MacFerguson asked, that Dr. Molina's samples are actually rocks from Mars? They're not from Mercury at all, Danvers asked, unable to hide a delighted smile. That's right, Kantrowitz replied, nodding somberly. At last she turned to look directly at Molina. I'm very sorry, Dr. Molina, but your samples are Martian in origin. But I found them here, Molina said, his voice a timid whine. On Mercury. MacFerguson said coolly, that raises the question of how they got to Mercury. A deadly silence fell across the conference table. After several moments, one of the younger men sitting across from Kantrowitz raised his hand. An Asian of some sort, Molina saw, or perhaps an Asian American. Dr. Abel Lee, pronounced MacFerguson. Astronomy Department, Melbourne University. Lee got to his feet. Molina was surprised to see that he was quite tall. It's well known that some meteorites found on Earth originated from Mars. They were blasted off the planet by the impact of a much more energetic meteor, achieved escape velocity, and wandered through interplanetary space until they fell into Earth's gravity well. In fact, MacFerguson added, the first evidence that life existed on Mars was found in a meteorite that had landed in Antarctica, although the evidence was hotly debated for many years. Lee made a little bow toward the professor, then continued. So it is possible that a rock that originated on or even beneath the surface of Mars can be blasted free of the planet and eventually impact on another planet. Molina nodded vigorously. But is it likely that such a rock would land on Mercury? Asked one of the other scientists. After all, Mercury's gravity well is considerably smaller than Earth's. And with its being so close to the sun, said another, wouldn't the chances be overwhelming that the rock would fall into the sun instead? Lee replied, I'd have to do the statistics, but I think both points are valid. The chances of a Martian rock landing on Mercury are vanishingly small, I would think. There's more to it than that, said MacFerguson, his bearded face looking grim. Molina felt as if he were the accused at a trial being run by Torquemada. First, said MacFerguson, raising a long calloused finger, Dr. Molina did not find merely one Martian rock, but a total of eight, all at the same site. It might have been a single meteor that broke up when it hit the ground, Molina said. MacFerguson's frown showed what he thought of that possibility. Second, he went on, is the fact that although we have searched an admittedly small area of the planet's surface, no other such samples have been found. But you've only scratched the surface of the problem, Molina cried, feeling more and more desperate. MacFerguson nodded like a judge about to pronounce a death sentence. I agree that we have searched only a small fraction of the planet's surface. Still, he sighed. Then, staring squarely down the table at Molina, he went on. There is such a thing as Occam's razor. When faced with several possible answers to a question, the simplest answer is generally the correct one. What do you mean? Molina whispered, although he knew what the answer would be. The simplest answer, MacFerguson said, his voice a low, deadly rumble, is that the site at which you discovered those rocks was deliberately seeded with samples brought to that location from Mars. No, Molina shouted. That's not true. You worked on Mars, did you not? 4 years ago, you had ample opportunity to collect rocks from Mars and eventually bring them to Mercury. No, they were already here. Some of the construction people found them. They sent a message to me. That could all have been prearranged, McPherson said. But it wasn't. I didn't. McPherson sighed again, even more heavily. This committee will make no judgment on how your samples arrived on Mercury, Dr. Molina. Nor will we accuse you or anyone else of wrongdoing. But we must conclude that the samples you claimed as evidence of biological activity on Mercury originated on Mars. Molina wanted to cry. I'm ruined, he thought. My career as a scientist is finished. Ended. Absolutely ruined.
Scapegoat. Bishop Danvers felt almost gleeful as he composed a message of triumph for New Morality headquarters in Atlanta. The scientists themselves had disproved Molina's claim of finding life on Mercury. That was a victory for believers everywhere. The entire thing was a sham, a hoax. It just shows how far these godless secularists will go in their efforts to destroy people's faith, Danvers said to himself. He was saddened to see Molina's credibility shattered. Victor was a friend, an acquaintance of long standing. He could be boorish and overbearing at times, but now he was a broken man. He brought it on himself, though, Danvers thought. The sin of pride. Now he's going to pay the price for it. Yet Danvers felt sorry for the man. They had known each other for almost a decade and a half, and although they were far removed from one another for most of that time, still he felt a bond with Victor Molina. Danvers had even performed the ceremony when Victor married Laura Turney. It's wrong for me to rejoice in his mistake, he thought. Deeper still, Danvers knew that the real bond between them had been forged in the destruction of another man, Mance Bracknell. Danvers and Victor had both played their part in the aftermath of that terrible tragedy in Ecuador. They had both helped to send Bracknell into exile. Well, Danvers said to himself, it could have been worse. After all, we saved the man from being torn apart by an angry mob. With a heavy sigh, Danvers pushed those memories out of the forefront of his mind. Concentrate on the task at hand, he told himself. Send your report to Atlanta. The Archbishop and his staff will be delighted to hear the good news. They can trumpet this tale as proof of how scientists try to undermine our faith in God. I'll probably be promoted higher up in the hierarchy. He finished dictating his report, then read it carefully as it scrolled on the wall screen in his quarters aboard the Himawari, adding a line here, changing an emphasis there, polishing his prose, until it was fit to be seen by the Archbishop. Yamagata must be pleased, he realized as he edited his words. He can resume his construction work, or whatever it is the engineers are supposed to be doing down on the planet's surface. Nanomachines, he remembered. They want to begin using nanomachines on Mercury. What can I do to prevent that? If I could stop them, this mission to Mercury would become a double triumph for me. When he was finally satisfied with his report, Danvers transmitted it to Earth. As an afterthought, he sent courtesy copies to the two young ministers that Atlanta had sent to assist him. They'll be heading back to Earth now, he thought. He got to his feet and rubbed his tired eyes. In all probability, I'll be heading back to Earth myself soon. He smiled at the prospects of a promotion and a better assignment as a reward for his work here. His smile turned wry. I hardly had to lift a finger, he thought. The scientists did all the work for me. Then his thoughts returned to Molina. Poor Victor. He must be beside himself with grief, and anger too, I suppose. Knowing Victor, the anger must be there. Perhaps suppressed right now, he's feeling so low, but sooner or later, the anger will come out. Bishop Danvers knew what he had to do. Squaring his shoulders, he left his quarters and marched down the ship's passageway toward the compartment that housed Victor Molina and his wife.
Molina was close to tears, Lara realized. He had burst into their compartment like a drunken man, staggering, wild-eyed. He frightened her those first few moments. Then he blubbered,